Oh my god, an insane goal!
The game's gone mad.
Hello, I'm Olivia and welcome to the brand new sparkly podcast, The Game's Gone Mad, where we discuss the week's biggest football stories. This week, we'll be asking if Man United's drive to the top four has crashed with Ollie at the wheel, if sportsmanship has sunk Leeds' chances of promotion, and why Gareth Bale ditched the Real Madrid bus on Sunday night.
The game's gone mad.
This week, I'm joined by Football Daily veterans, Patrick Van Straten and Joe Tomlinson. How are you both?
Felt harsh.
You're veteran. Definitely a veteran.
Veteran.
You're old.
You've been here a long
I'm not
time.
A veteran. You're more of a veteran of Football Daily than I am. I'm a veteran of life.
Yeah. Clearly struggling with
so
it.
So brutal. You're 25 now. You were so fresh-faced when I met you.
Yeah, I was. But these things happen.
Evil has kept you young, though.
I know.
Like Olivia.
Wow.
Yeah,
God,
whatever.
I didn't think that was going to... Oh, that's
you know
started
what?
Me.
No prisoners taken on the Dodcast.
Yeah.
Straight in.
How's your day been? You both seem quite negative today.
I'm actually quite positive. I had a good day. A very organised day.
Are you ready to talk about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Had to bring the mood down. Yeah, why not? I'm up for it.
So you have been singing Ollie's at the Wheel around the office quite a bit, Joe.
But yeah.
Man United have only won 2 in their last 10 games. Mm. And they've lost 7.
Ooh.
Not good.
Ooh.
Which isn't great, but they're still, you know, outside chance of getting in the top four.
Yeah. I mean, I think just mainly because of how poor everybody else is.
Yeah.
Yep.
So 100%. That's like a big caveat to that stat. Mm-hmm. Like, we are close to the top four because everybody else is pure average.
Yeah.
But do you think Man United have really rushed into giving him the decision? Because they didn't need to make a manager so soon, surely.
I think they did need to. I think that's a little bit of like a fallacy that they couldn't have given him the job. I think United had to pull the trigger on giving him the job because of contractual situations with a number of their key players. I think United are really keen to keep Pogba, very keen to keep David De Gea. It may be even more so than those two, keen to keep Marcus Rashford, whose contract runs out next year.
That would play so badly for him to leave.
So badly, particularly with Manchester United fans, who obviously adore Marcus Rashford as a homegrown boy. And I think those players will have wanted contractual... As part of a contract renewal, they'll have all wanted assurances as to who was the manager.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably said to the club, to a level, you know, we saw them saying it publicly that they all wanted him to get the job.
Yeah.
There was Paul Pogba after the Champions League. There was Romelu Lukaku after the Champions League. There was Rashford in the season. There was David De Gea on his Instagram. So it's not as if the players publicly weren't asking for him to get the job. So behind the scenes, I can only imagine the calls were even louder, let alone if they were also asking for a new contract. Some of them might have gone, I'll sign a new contract with this club if you can assure me that Ollie's going to be here next season.
Do you think it was a bit of a romantic appointment in the first place anyway, and the bubble now has kind of burst a bit in reality? 100%
it was a romantic appointment. Definitely head over heart. I mean, heart over head from our board. But our board are notoriously useless, aren't they? I mean, we just don't have any direction.
Rio Ferdinand?
Yes, speaking of which, Ed Woodward has held conversations with several candidates, apparently, and Sky Sports News are reporting that Rio Ferdinand is in the running.
I think it's kind of a fallacy. I don't believe it.
Being in the running is like such a vague thing.
Yeah, I literally don't believe a word of it. In the last 2 weeks, I've seen Mike Phelan be offered the technical role. I think that was reported by The Telegraph. I'm not too sure. We've seen Rio now reported by a number of different outlets. I think there was somebody else midweek as well, another ex-Manchester United player. I can't quite remember who it was.
Supposedly Van der Sar, you've had a look at as well.
Yeah, we definitely had a look at Van der Sar and his contacts with Marc Overmars, who are obviously doing an extremely good job over at Ajax. But equally, Edwin van der Sar is not in charge of football operations at Ajax, as far as I'm aware. That is Marc Overmars.
Yeah.
Exactly. And obviously, Ed Woodward's got his sticky fingers all over our commercial activity, and it's been fairly successful to a level because we're making probably more money commercially than any other football club in the world. But we have no direction as a football club, so I'm not surprised that he got given that job because of the romantic factor. If in fact we did say no to Pochettino for Ollie, then that is probably going to prove to be a mistake. But I, for one, after the PSG game, I remember right up until the PSG game being very level-headed and thinking...
Sure.
I said it on loads of Sunday Vibes, loads of winners and losers. you've got to go for Poch if he's available. As soon as the third goal went in Paris...
You just lost your head, didn't you?
Gone. Head's gone. So if my head went, I can only imagine what happened to Ed's.
Yeah, but you don't have the responsibility that Woodward has. He can't afford his head to go.
Yeah, I know. But he's also a guy who I've seen a viral video this week say, Bastian Schweinsteiger, that will send tingles down the spine of the opposition. And literally nobody thought that. His knees were off at the time of signing. So I'm not overly surprised that this man doesn't make the correct footballing decisions. My worry is that we are going to end up with a Rio Ferdinand. I said on, I think, the stream last week that I wouldn't be totally against Mike Phelan being the technical director if that is on the footballing side. And the reason for that is that I think you need somebody with a simpatico vision alongside Ollie. If you are going to stick with Ollie, which is what Man United have done, they've put their ball in his court, in Ollie Gunnar Solskjaer's court. They need somebody to support him in that style. If Ollie wants to play a certain way and sign a certain player, they need someone with the same vision at a director level, which we currently don't have. Mike Phelan suits that bill. He's going to want to play the same football as Ollie. He's probably going to recruit in the same way as Ollie. I'd imagine that'll be heavily British, or like at least heavily Premier League orientated. I'd imagine it'll be quite young.
It's not the worst time to do that.
No, not at all, which is okay.
Like we used to mock that in the past, but at the moment, like when you look at your transfer targets, a lot of them are kind of young and British and are still very good players. You know, you think about Wan-Bissaka, you think about Sancho.
Declan Rice, sure. All these other players that have been linked. So if that is the vision that Ollie wants to portray as Manchester United, he needs somebody to support that vision 100% behind the scenes. And if Mick Phelan is going to do that, then I'm not completely against it. And at least it would get the ball rolling with technical directors. You know, if that project failed and Ollie didn't work, you could say, okay, we didn't quite get it right. The technical director didn't get it right. Ollie didn't get it right. Then you've at least got a position to fill when they left. At the moment, that's null and void.
Yeah, there's no structure.
There's no structure. There's no position there. And I think if you were to go out and get a Monchi or a Zorc and say, you're going to work with Ollie, I think they might not pull in the same direction. And that may end up being even worse for the club than we are right now. And you'll see even more Nemanja Matic's signed.
So, Patrick, if they do manage to get a sporting director, would you give Ollie the responsibility of helping to bring in the whole new talent? He's got no experience in a transfer window.
Well, no, that's why you want to get somebody reasonably experienced. Like, I don't think they should be looking at guys like Rio. I think they should be looking at people like Paul Mitchell, who they were linked to before at RB Leipzig, who'd be amazing for them.
Yeah.
Like, but my thing with Ollie is that Mourinho was... Under Mourinho, this team was playing below its talent level. And with Ollie, it's playing at its talent level. I think the losses recently, some of them been a bit unlucky, some of them deserved. In the same way that the wins before that, some of them were lucky and some of them were deserved. I think that they're basically performing around the level I'd expect from their talent. So I kind of say, if he can get them playing at their talent level, the next step for us is to improve our talent level. You know, I kind of feel that if they were to get in some good defenders, that they could easily become a much better side overnight. And I don't really think, while there's no sign that Solskjaer is going to be a game changer for them managerially, like Klopp or like Guardiola or like Pochettino, there's also no sign that he's going to be a bad manager.
I think how long do you see him lasting?
It really depends how good their signings are. Mm. If they nail a couple of signings and continue and basically make third place in the league theirs over the next few seasons, which is not impossible because Spurs are going to probably maybe lose a couple of stars. They'll probably lose Pochettino at some point. They don't have a lot of money. Chelsea don't have a transfer window. Arsenal are a state money-wise and have nothing behind the scenes. So Man United could easily, with the right couple of signings, lock up third place. And while they won't be happy they're not competing for the title, from a commercial standpoint, which is what Ed Woodward cares about, that will keep that club in the black and pushing in the right direction.
And keep him in the job.
Exactly.
And you mentioned that there are a couple players you need to buy, need replacements for. Mm-hmm. Who would they be? Who should Ollie's targets be?
Before getting on to signings, I think it's as important to get rid of a lot of dead wood in that Manchester United squad. You go through and you can isolate a lot immediately. I would get Ashley Young out of the club. I would look to move on one of the Chuckle brothers, probably Phil Jones at this stage. I'm not overly convinced about Eric Bailly. If a good enough bid came in for Eric Bailly, I would be pretty tempted to take it. Not the biggest fan of Nemanja Matic anymore. Again, in a similar sort of respect to Bailly, if a big enough bid came in.
This is quite a big overhaul, though, for a new manager and a brand new sporting director.
That's where we are as a club. And because our recruitment's been so horrid over the last few years, this is the result. This is the result of what we've been left with. Yeah. Alexis Sanchez has to be sold this summer. There's no circumstances that Alexis Sanchez can still be at this club next year. He has to be gone. Juan Mata passed his best. He's got to go. He's available on a free. He will, I'd imagine, move on. Ander Herrera seems like he's agreed a deal with PSG, so that will probably go through. So I think you can comfortably say 6 or 7 players should, whether or not they will, should go this summer. And the replacements for those need to be carefully identified, because in the past, we've obviously gone down the tact of Galacticos.
Yeah.
And the bigger the name, the better for Ed Woodward in terms of commercial viability. Look at Alexis Sanchez.
Really kind of.
Yeah, and also now we need to look at not even necessarily the best individuals. We need to start looking at what works for the team structure that Ollie wants to build. Now, I'm not entirely sure what that is. We've seen him operate with a 5 at the back sometimes this season, with a 4, with a diamond effectively away at Stamford Bridge. So I don't know whether Ollie knows his best system, which is slightly concerning right now, or whether he has it in mind and he's trying to identify the players that are going to work and aren't going to work from that. You'll also see players like Marcos Rojo, he'll leave this summer. Damian, all those players not even mentioned, will also go. So I think he needs to identify a system and then sign individuals that work as a team, not just for themselves. Like Alexis Sanchez was signed as a name. We already had a left wing slot locked down. You've got Martial, who can play there comfortably. You've got Rashford, who's operated out that left-hand side a lot. Alexi is predominantly being used at United as a left winger. Why do we need Alexi if we're going for that position? We should be looking to sign a right winger. You know, I think United have had the least attacks down the right-hand side of any club in Europe's top 5 leagues.
Really?
Season, which is sums up how poor that right-hand side
huge
is.
Problem.
Obviously, that's an area that's easily identifiable. Ashley Young needs to be replaced. Mm-hmm. United need to go and sign young players for these positions. Yes. We've obviously got Dalot in the ranks, but still not sure whether Dalot's an out-and-out right-back or even more of a right-winger at this stage.
Yeah.
So I would go for a right-back. I would go for a centre-back. I would go desperately for at least one central midfielder, maybe 2 central midfielders and a right-winger. God. I think 5 players are needed this summer for Manchester United. Whether or not we'll get all 5 in one window, I doubt. But yeah. I think we'll definitely get a centre-back, we'll definitely get a right-back, and we'll go big for Jadon Sancho. And that would be my feeling. Woof.
So as a United fan, genuinely, would you be more comfortable about the season ahead with Ollie at the wheel or Poch in the dugout?
Oh, definitely Poch. 100%
so
Poch.
So you do think that...
Poch.
It's funny because Poch was having a little bit of a bad patch around the time that Ollie was having a great time. Like they got dumped out of a couple of cups, and now Poch has gone on and has arguably, with his worst squad, achieved more than he has in any other season as the wheels have come off with Ollie.
In terms of comfortability, I would be more comfortable with Poch. Obviously, got a better record and more. But Ollie, still for me, I'm desperate to succeed. So I would rather see Ollie succeed than be comfortable with Poch. And it is a way bigger shot.
What does success look like, though? Like don't get me wrong. I actually think Ollie will succeed in the sense of, like, he'll keep you competitive for the top 4. But will he challenge for the title? Not while Klopp and Guardiola are around, I don't think.
For Ollie in particular, though, I think success might not even end up being measured in terms of trophies and top 4. Ollie's success might be measured in how well he can remove Deadwood and sign Young. Even if he doesn't end up succeeding with the squad, I would not be surprised in 2 to 3 years if you look back on this time period and went, you know what? Ollie got rid of Fellaini, he got rid of Young, he got rid of Jones, Rojo, Damian, Matic got moved on.
Turned Rashford from a prospect into a star.
And in the same time period, he managed to keep Martial to a 5-year deal, which he's already done. He managed to bring Wan-Bissaka in. He managed to bring Jadon Sancho in. And if he doesn't get them to work, I reckon in 5 years' time, he'll probably look back and go, not the best tactician, but at least he had a vision for Man United of the future, which I guess Pochettino would do. And of course, he would have been an amazing signing, but he's not there now. Let's just move on. You've got to back your man. He's in the dugout. It's Ollie at the wheel.
Right, let's keep those rose-tinted glasses on and move on to the next section. In section 2, we're talking all things Marcelo Bielsa after he proved to be big on sportsmanship and turn the narrative after he was caught cheating earlier in the season, spying on his opponents. Now he's letting them score a goal against Aston Villa. What did you think about it?
I don't know, really. Like, I mean, it sounds like it was a head injury, right? I think it was Kjaer went down with a head injury. And his teammates were asking for it to be knocked out.
Yep.
But Leeds played on.
And the referee signalled to play
Well, exactly. And when it's a head injury, it's the referee's decision. If the referee decides not to give it, I kind of feel like the team with the ball within their rights to do what they want.
So Leeds opted to play on and went on to score.
Yeah.
And that's what caused the drama. And then Bielsa instructed his Leeds side to let Aston Villa walk the ball into the net.
Great, mate. 25 years of reputation just ruined by Bielsa there. Just, you know, Leeds fans desperate to let that hit the net when an absolutely awful reputation of Leeds United as a football club. Bielsa finally turning the ship around. Yeah, I think they should have stood. Play to the whistle. That's what you're always taught. Play to the whistle. And the whole Villa team stopped.
So, yeah, football just loves a moral panic, though, doesn't it? Like, everybody loves to get on their high horse about something, even when it's literally meaningless, a meaningless game, a meaningless moment. And of course, John Terry is on the sideline shouting about it. He's the one who's decided that he's going to be the arbiter of morality in this moment. John Terry. I just don't understand it. Like, I feel like with Bielsa, it just feels a little bit like it's part of this eternal, like, foreigners versus Brits narrative. Where it's like foreigners don't know how it's done here. They dive around, they cheat, they go and spy on other clubs, and the Brits would never do that. It's like, I'm sorry, like, have you watched Leicester play? Have you watched Everton play? Have you seen the level of diving from the English players in those sides? It's unbelievable. Like, and I just feel the same thing. Like, everyone wants to pretend that, like, there's not this ugly underside of football, but there was. The moment that football became a valuable industry, that was the moment that people were going to start doing everything they could to get a leg up. And I kind of like that Marcelo Bielsa is just like, let's send spies to their games. I wanted him to commit to it. I think he should have gone full heel. And I think he should have said, not only did it stand, but we think that your player should be booked for feigning an injury and trying to con the ref.
I can't believe Bielsa actually... I at no stage did I think Bielsa was going to be like, yeah, pull that back, you're going to score a free
kick. I know, right?
It's so un-Bielsa, man. It's so un-Bielsa.
Burn all your bridges is the Bielsa way.
I think he thought in that moment, you know, Sheffield United are already up. So,
yeah, exactly. Like, so it's just like, why torch my reputation?
Promotion was gone. Why torch my reputation at that stage? So now he's down in the playoffs and he knows that he's going to have a tough test because Aston Villa are absolutely going to win the playoffs.
Yeah, it looks like they'll be meeting them in the final. But do you think that karma is now on his side? Surely it is.
No, yeah, no, absolutely not.
The madman, Marcelo Bielsa.
No, I don't think so. I think Leeds have built up enough karma over the last 25 years for them to absolutely never have any positive karma. So one small incident from Marcelo Bielsa doesn't like excuse 30 years of assholes.
So after the game, he said, Bielsa this is, said that English football is known for sportsmanship.
Oh,
so I
up.
Don't have to comment on this.
Is it?
That's
ass-kissing. Really?
That's pure ass-kissing from
Bielsa. It took me a while and I've come up with three examples.
Okay, three examples of sportsmanship.
In English football, okay. I'll see if you can come up with any more.
Okay.
2000, Paolo Di Canio gave up a goal-scoring opportunity to check on the injured keeper.
Yeah, he caught the ball. Yeah. When the ball was crossed for him to score... the keeper's out of the goal. There are defenders back, so there's no guarantee he was going to score. But he probably
would. Wasn't. It was head height. It was like running away from goal, head height. He would have had to be the most miraculous header over a kick.
And also, are we giving like British football the credit for that? It's Paolo Di Canio, the most Italian man who's ever lived. But caught the ball. Like, I think that was a great act of sportsmanship from Paolo Di Canio. But the other thing he did was push over a ref.
Yeah.
Oh, there's also, actually, on this topic, there's also Robbie Fowler. This is a classic example.
I've got this. Yeah. This is my second example. In 1997, Robbie Fowler tried to get a decision for a penalty against Arsenal revoked after he said he fell over, wasn't tripped by David Seaman.
Yeah.
But Liverpool went on to score anyway, from even after he missed the penalty.
I think, didn't he miss the subsequent spot kick there? I think he deliberately
missed the spot kick, but then someone else scored the rebound.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
So yeah, he actually did try and score the pen.
No, I'm sure he didn't. I thought he put it wide.
Because then he could just blazed it over.
I thought he left Seaman save it.
Oh,
I don't remember. But I do remember him like saying that it wasn't a pen and the ref being like,
"Yeah,
this is embarrassing. No, it's a pen."
Right, so that's two of my suggestions. One of them is completely destroyed. Robbie Fowler is holding the torch for sportsmanship in English football. And then in 2007, in the League Cup, Leicester were winning 1-0 against Nottingham Forest when Leicester keeper Clive Clark collapsed at halftime in the dressing room and the game was abandoned. And then Nottingham Forest let Leicester restore their lead in the replay, let them walk the ball in the net.
Did you say 2007?
Yeah, I did say 2007.
And they had a keeper called Clive. What the hell was going on in Leicester? Like, I understand that Leicester's a backwards place, but my judgment here is entirely based on Chris Hamill. But surely no one was called Clive in the year of our Lord, 2007. That's mental.
I can't really remember any other sporting acts.
I know, I found it really difficult to
find. I don't know, I actually think that when a player's injured, often there are sporting acts. So for instance, like Eric Bailly got injured, who are you playing at the weekend? Chelsea. And when he went down, like, then you do see players from both sides who are genuinely concerned and, like, trying to get the attention of the officials. When someone's truly injured, players can tell, like, almost always.
You see the two-armed wave, you panic.
And I think that is an act of, like, professional courtesy. And, of course, there is that guy as well who saved, like, five opponents' lives. You know, like, if you get a concussion, basically, you can swallow your tongue.
Yeah.
And there's one guy who has, like, saved five opponents' lives.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Or maybe three. From, like, pulling tongues out of opponents' throats to stop them asphyxiating. Which, you're like, is it good luck that he's there? Or is it bad luck that he's causing
it? Either that, or he is just, like, got a really weird fetish. And anytime he sees someone knocked out, he just dives straight in the mouth just to fondle the tongue.
Maybe pushes his tongue down just to pull it back out.
There's no proof that he's actually pulling the tongue out, though.
Great point.
Right. Well, in
glad we've covered that, yeah.
Conspiracy theory.
And on that note, let's move on to the next section. Right, in part three, I'm going to give you both a quick headline that I've chosen from the week's football, and I just want a quick reaction.
Okay.
Maybe a sentence or two.
One or two sentences.
Yeah. First one is, Hodgson expects 80 million Man United target Zaha to stay at Palace next season.
Nonsense. I think that he's not nonsense that he's going to stay, because I think he absolutely is, because nobody's going to pay anywhere near that for, what is he now, 27, 28 year old Wilfred Zaha,
and 80 million.
Certainly not going to be Man United, who have already attempted that experiment and failed with that experiment.
The value you can get for 80 mil in the market is way above Wilfred Zaha. Like, I mean, yeah, he probably will stay there, because why would anyone pay the amount that Palace want for him? They're going to sell Wan-Bissaka instead.
Perfect. Virgil van Dijk pips Raheem Sterling to PFA Player of the Year.
I mean, it's true, but I feel like it should not have happened. Like, look, I'm fine with it, but I just feel like if a defender wins Player of the Year, because defending is like a collective act in the way that attacking isn't quite, I do feel that when a defender wins, it's a sign that there's been no truly superstar attacker in the Prem. Like, I think that as good as Van Dijk's been this season, has this been like the greatest defensive season by a player in like the last 20 years? Of course it hasn't. That's an absurd statement. And I just think that if we had, say, Suarez having that 13-14 season, or Mo Salah having a season from last year, or even some of those Van Persie ones from 2011-12, then I think that they'd have won it instead.
So would you have given it to Raheem Sterling?
I'd give every award to Raheem Sterling. I love Raheem Sterling.
Yeah, I would have given it to Raheem Sterling, I think.
But I don't grudge Van Dijk getting it. Like, no, it's been phenomenal.
Yeah, we said this on Sunday Vibes, didn't we? That it's kind of either one gets it is absolutely fine. But I would have given it to Raheem, because I think that you can't take into account his off-the-field stuff that he's had to go through, but you should.
Yeah.
So I think if I was a footballer, I would have voted for Raheem.
Yeah.
Which is why he then went on to win the Football Writers Association Footballer of the Year.
It's so interesting. I'd have thought it'd be the other way around. I'd have thought the players would vote for Raheem and the writers would vote for Van Dijk.
Yeah, but the players are thick, aren't they? They also put Paul Pogba in the team.
Or maybe just all their forwards are so sick of playing up against Van Dijk all year that they're like, yeah, you know what, fair enough. He does deserve it.
Right. Bale didn't get on the Real Madrid bus after defeat on Sunday.
Probably off to play golf.
Probably somebody told him where it was in Spanish and he had no idea what they were talking about. and he was just like, cerveza.
I think Gareth Bale will still be at Barcelona come the summer anyway. I feel like all these sort of headlines just get perennially thrown around by Marca. It's part of this anti-Bale smear campaign that they try and run twice a season just to get him out of the club, because they will always prefer a Spanish-speaking native.
Yeah.
So I don't think that Gareth will leave this summer, because he has no suitors at his wage, his age, with his injury record.
Yeah.
But do you think he's happy in Madrid?
No.
I think quite clearly
not. Yeah, definitely not.
He looks so miserable all the time.
Like, there was reports of him being loaned out by Madrid a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And unless Real Madrid are willing to eat that wage and let him leave on loan by still paying, what, 60% upwards of his wage, I don't think it'll happen.
This is what we're seeing this summer.
Might be the only option, though.
Yeah, he might do a James... There's no reason he can't do a James Rodriguez and leave on loan for 2 years
for
with
like
an option
Inter
to buy.
Or something.
And you know what? A few clubs might be tempted at a loan with an option to buy because he's obviously still a fantastic player, but he's just so injury prone.
But I think we're going to see... I think this summer actually is going to prompt a lot of big clubs to rethink the way they do wages because Arsenal are going to try and shift Ozil and Mkhitaryan. They've got big wages. Yeah. United are going to try and shift Alexis Sanchez and Real are going to try and shift Bale. All these guys are on huge wages because they were signed up as if they were still the player they were a couple of years ago. And now these clubs are not going to be able to get rid of them. And I think after this, we'll see bigger sides be a lot more careful about the salaries that they give to guys who are approaching 30.
Yeah.
The next one is an excellent story. Okay. Neymar punches Rennes fan after shock defeat in the French Cup. Patrick?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Like, I mean, to be honest, if I had to be punched by any footballer, I reckon Neymar would probably be like one of the most feeble punches.
It did, it didn't look like it hurt him, did it?
Which Ren fan was it? It wasn't Salma Hayek, was it?
It wasn't. It was an absolute tosser. I mean, the bloke fully deserved it, to be totally honest.
Yeah?
I fully backed Neymar. Yeah, I mean, Neymar was walking up to collect his runners-up medal and the bloke was just literally shouting abuse in his face. So it was like...
Fair enough.
Yeah, but he shouldn't turn around and punch him.
Absolutely should. He absolutely
it's
should.
It's like a squirrel punch. It's fine.
No, you know what I mean?
And also, I feel like...
He doesn't sucker punch him. The bloke has got a camera straight in his face and he's just shouting abuse for a reaction. Neymar gives him one and then he goes, oh, God.
Yeah, but okay, is it... look, if you... Road rage is an existing phenomenon, right? Because people understand that their adrenaline works a different way when they're driving. Similarly, when people are drunk, people are more aggressive because, like, their impulse control is inhibited.
Right.
So, like, after you've been running around for 90 minutes, like, genuinely...
You should be able to punch anyone you like.
No, but I'm saying that, like, your adrenaline is super high. Like, also, you're super annoyed about, like, decisions that have got against you. You've obviously lost the match. Like, so I'm saying that it's actually... It's not like two people on the street and one guy just hits the other for no reason. I'm saying that footballers in that moment should maybe not be put in close proximity to fans shouting
and
abuse.
And also, if you are the fan screaming abuse in an opposition player's face, like, don't go crying when you've been whacked.
Yes, exactly.
He should be in a position where he has the... maturity not to turn around and punch that. I'm sure a lot of people are shouting abuse at him and I'm sure he gets that a lot. You can't just turn around and punch them all.
I don't know. I feel like people need to know that there's a potential risk. Like, if you're going to be an absolute dick to someone, I think that you need to do it with the knowledge that something bad can happen. Like, I'm not saying that, like, somebody can do whatever they want to you, but if I abuse someone in the street and they hit me, I probably have to be like, yeah, maybe I just deserve that. So I kind of feel like it's ridiculous, this idea that people just get to shout whatever they want at footballers because they're rich and famous and that they're not going to get filled in.
If Raheem had turned around to those lads that were abusing him on the front row of Stamford Bridge and whacked one of them in the mouth, I would have had no complaints.
I'd have given him player of the year right there.
Yeah, and I understand that.
That would have been a much more...
I understand that was like racist abuse, but either way...
We have no idea what the guy said to Neymar. Like, I mean, I'm not going to say it's the same thing, but it's like, you know, it's the same way that the narrative about Zidane and Materazzi from the World Cup final in 2006 has always been Zidane lost his cool. And you're like, I think there are things somebody could say to you when your blood's up.
It's like when Eric Cantona kicked that geezer in the face. I fully back Cantona. Like,
that's quite strong, though. A punch and a kick in the face from a professional footballer.
The guy was an absolute tosser. Like, nailed on. Like, he sold his story about being kicked in the face by Cantona to the newspaper.
He probably
like,
never washed his face
again. You're an absolute idiot. And, you know, he's been banned for... Like, PSG must be really gutted because Neymar's got an... overall, because of also the post-Champions League incident, he's got missing 11 games at the start of next season.
Oh, my God.
Because he's banned...
After playing about 1,300 minutes this season
He's banned for 8 in the league and he's banned for 3 Champions League games.
That outlay has turned out not that well, I would say, the Neymar money.
Yeah, I mean, they could literally recoup it like that, though. Yeah, true. Like, just flog
right, this was meant to be a quick response.
Okay.
So let's move on to the next one. Got to take back control. Pyjamas with no shoes. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
This was a headline this week. Pyjamas with no shoes.
Never heard of it.
Pyjamas with no shoes.
What are we
you have no guess.
What journal was this? What periodical?
It's been in a few.
Pyjamas with no shoes. What, is this like a phenomenon?
This is going to be somebody who was just like, oh, they are pyjamas with no shoes. It's going to be like Overmars talking about Spurs or something.
No, it was Pochettino talking about Daniel Levy.
I feel like I was pretty accurate, to be fair. Like, okay, what do you say?
He said that the first time he met the Daniel Levy, Daniel Levy was wearing pajamas with no shoes in the afternoon. In the afternoon.
And why not?
Why shouldn't he? Why shouldn't he live like a king?
Yeah, look at that. Like, Daniel Levy, I like it. To be fair, if there was one man that I didn't think would be doing that, it's Daniel Levy.
Yeah.
Daniel Levy looks like the type of guy who sleeps in a suit. Literally.
He puts a fresh one on before he goes to bed, so in the morning he can just get, like, lifted out of his coffin and go off to, like, gouge someone else for more money.
I agree.
Like, he's so good at his job, that guy. I don't know, Pochettino, to be honest, the thing is about Pochettino has such an interesting speaking style that it is just the sort of thing he might say, like the whole washer tumble dryer situation. Like, he's become the new Cantona, where he will just come out with, like, a sentence that nobody understands and everyone thinks he's a genius.
Yeah, when the seagulls follow the trawler. Rubbish.
To end this week's episode of The Game's Gone Mad, we're going to be talking about some embarrassing moments. Tottenham were accused of fake chants being blared out over the PA system at their new home, and Sheffield Wednesday officially congratulated Sheffield United on their promotion, which was just a bit cringe.
Feels like they might have outsourced their social media to, like, an American
child. The fans
are absolutely furious.
I mean, it is also like that sort of thing where, like, like Roma's Twitter account, like,
definitely not run by anyone at Roma.
Like, that's obviously run by a PR company in the States or in Britain. Like,
I hate it.
And everybody's like, oh, you know, he's so funny. Well, Roma is such a great, like, team because they don't run it. They just absolutely outsource that. In the same way, I bet you Sheffield Wednesday have probably got an 18-year-old university intern running their social media account. I'll bet you any money that they do not employ a social media executive.
Everybody's just taken this from Germany. Like, Germany's clubs used to have really good, like, social media accounts, and now everyone's taken it far too far. So I don't. When Arsenal are losing a game, I don't want to see, like, you know, the little gritting teeth emoji, like, from Arsenal's official Twitter account at half-time. Like, piss off.
As an Arsenal fan, if Tottenham win the Champions League this year, do you want Arsenal to come out and congratulate them?
Yeah, big time. I'd love that.
No, you wouldn't.
No, I don't care. I don't care about Tottenham. Like, of course I don't want them to do that. I just think it's embarrassing. I agree that it's embarrassing. I think it's moronic. Like, what are they doing? Like, I think that you have to have some understanding of what the club is. You have to have some understanding of how these things are going to play. But I mean, like, just social media accounts for football clubs are, like, barely connected to the clubs anymore, man.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
It's not like you're getting, you know, Pochettino tweeting at halftime, oh, you know, two goals to the good, like, thumbs up emoji. This was an official club statement, though.
It wasn't just put on their Twitter.
What?
It was on their website.
Yeah. They wrote it. How long was it? Was it like
a paragraph long?
Well, it's just like, congratulations.
They didn't win the league.
It wasn't like something that actually happened. Like, so for instance, say they were going to be liquidated. Now they're not liquidated, you know, and that actually means there are more jobs for people in Sheffield, which is a good thing. That I could imagine. But, like, congratulating them on promotion is just like saying, you're better than we are and we're delighted about it.
Pretty mental.
That's just stupid.
Although,
man,
equally, congratulations to Chris Wilder, who seems like a lovely gentleman. And I believe has, over, like, the last four seasons or three seasons, taken only manager who's taken more points in Europe's top four, in England's top four leagues, is Pep Guardiola and Chris Wilder since he took over at Sheffield United.
That's bananas.
Yeah.
Woof.
And he's stuck to go in League One as well.
Whoa.
So,
stick that down your pipe and smoke
it. We're not going to top that. Let's just end this here. Thank you for listening to the first ever episode of The Game's Gone Mad. Definitely not the Dogcast. Let me know what you think we should be covering next week. Bye.